This is your AEW Rampage review for Friday, October 8th, 2021. Happy Friday. I am the Solemn Monster, coming off a hot Dynamite on Wednesday with the return of the Hangman, Adam Page, winning the casino ladder match on Wednesday. That earns him the right to challenge for the AEW Championship at some point down the road. But what we found out tonight is that next week on Dynamite, we're going to get the brackets for this year's World Title Eliminator, which is starting. They did the same thing last year. That's how we got to Hangman and Omega in the finals at Full Gear. They're doing the same thing this year, which is very interesting. In fact, they announced some other interesting matches coming up for TV next week. We'll get into all that. As far as tonight's show is concerned, I thought this was one of the better episodes of Rampage that they've done since the show got started in August. The Jade Cargill match was basically, it was a glorified squash. The other matches on the show, the actual competitive matches, I thought were all good to very good. In fact, the CM Punk Daniel Garcia match, that was about as good as Punk has looked since coming back to wrestling. So on the whole, I thought this was an enjoyable hour. The key word there is hour. It passes quickly. It's an easy watch. That's what I like about it. Excalibur, Taz, and Chris Jericho were on commentary tonight. Yes, Chris Jericho was back. And during the tag team match or the Jade Cargill match? It might have been during the tag team match. He was quite loud and obnoxious. But that was our booth tonight. No Ricky Starks, because Ricky Starks was in the main event, which was a Philadelphia street fight, which we'll talk about. Shout out to Casey DeMost, becoming a sound-off superstar. They open with Mark Henry doing his weekly on-screen promo. This was quite the week for Mark Henry. Mark Henry was making some headlines this week. Mark Henry went on Busted Open Radio yesterday and basically, quite possibly without his knowledge or without his permission, exposed to the world that Pac had suffered a concussion a few months ago, which is probably why they had to delay that match at All Out between him and Andrade to give him some extra time to be medically cleared. I don't think publicly that anybody knew anything about that. But there he was, and he even said on the radio, he goes, well, I might be violating HIPAA, but, you know, and then he just goes and mentions that Pac, you know, got concussed a couple of months ago. So, yeah, that was quite the interesting little reveal from Mark Henry. Mark Henry, Dr. Henry, giving us the diagnosis for Pac. Tonight he was on his, in his usual role as the MC for the split-screen promo. Usually they save this for right before the main event, which they did. They brought him back out to do that again later in the show. Here they open the show with Mark Henry dead in the middle of the screen, CM Punk on our right, 2.0, and Daniel Garcia on our left. And Garcia talked about how he attacked Punk in Chicago, which happened weeks ago. What do you think 23-year-old CM Punk would have done? You know, basically saying, look, if you were in my shoes, if you were the young kid trying to make his way, you would have done the exact same thing that I did. You would attack the guy in his hometown. And Garcia said that tonight he puts an end to the Punk Love Fest. Punk turned around and said the 23-year-old CM Punk would not be hanging out with the Nasty Boys' little brothers. Because 2.0 were wearing vests tonight that were, in fact, very similar to the type of stuff you would expect to see Knobs and Sags wearing back in the day. Now, I think the majority of the AEW audience probably gets that reference. I would imagine there are people who don't, who had no idea what CM Punk was talking about, but they thought it was some kind of pop culture joke, and they laughed at it anyway. But we all know, here in this chat live tonight, we all know who the Nasty Boys are. Actually, Nasty Boy Knobs is not doing too well. Knobs is in the hospital. He's been in the hospital now for weeks. He's got a lot of health issues. So hopefully he can pull through that. The last thing we need to be doing is talking about another wrestler gone. I feel like there's been so many of them already this year. And this weekend, actually on the Sunday show, I'm going to talk about Reggie Parks. We lost Reggie Parks, famous wrestling belt maker. They don't make belts like Reggie Parks belts anymore. He passed away this week from COVID. But Punk came out first. He got the first entrance here for this match. Again, back in the long tights, that he wore it all out, I think just to piss people off, because he knew that people all on social media were going on and on about, you know, the long pants and bring back the trunks. We want CM trunks. I mean, as if any of this is relevant at all. I mean, who gives a shit? So I'm sure there was a little bit of trolling going on there. But Punk got a heel hook off a single leg takedown, and Garcia got a rope break. Garcia hit a chop, hard chop, on Punk in the corner. So Punk slapped him and took him down to the mat, not once, but twice. Punk went for the GTS. Garcia escaped with the assist from 2.0. And Lee and Parker, they were working over Punk's leg. The referee didn't see any of this. So with the referee's back turned, 2.0 were working over Punk's leg. They went into a break. So they come back, and Garcia is still working over Punk's legs. This is all mat work here from Daniel Garcia, who, for someone who is 23 years old, who up until a few months ago I had never seen before, I had never heard of him, I didn't even know he existed. This kid is impressive, which is probably why he's been featured so much on television. This is the second time he has headlined. I mean, he opened the show, but really this was the main event. Especially looking back on it now, this really should have closed out the show. But this is his second big match here on Rampage in the last several weeks. So Punk went for a vertical suplex. Garcia slid out of the move. He clipped Punk right in the back of the knee. Garcia went for a charging drop kick in the corner. Punk ducked out of the way, so he got nothing but turnbuckle. Garcia went to attack the leg again. Punk caught him with a knee strike and a kick for a near fall. So Punk catches Garcia with a leg lariat and a neck breaker, gets another near fall. He goes for a short arm clothesline. Garcia counters into an angle slam for two. And Garcia goes for the sharpshooter. Or as some might put it, given I guess Sting being in AEW, the Scorpion Deathlock. It will always be the sharpshooter. Even though I have to point out, Bret Hart was not the first one to use the move. Sting was using the move before Bret was. And there were people using it before Sting as well. But Bret, to me, when I see that move, I don't see Scorpion Deathlock. I see sharpshooter. It will always be the sharpshooter. So Garcia goes for the sharpshooter. Punk battles out of it, though. Gets a short arm clothesline. Pepsi twist. Gets a near fall. Punk goes for the GTS. Garcia rolls through. Gets Punk in the sharpshooter. And this time, Punk was able to maneuver out of it. And he sent Garcia into 2.0, who had gotten up on the ring apron. So he collides with 2.0. They all tumble out of the ring. Punk goes up top. He hits a top rope crossbody, wiping out all three men on the floor. And when he got up, like the camera showing Punk on the ground as he is trying to recover. And he has this look on it. First of all, Punk, I'm sure people have pointed this out before. It didn't really hit me until tonight, looking at him with the scruff and just his face. How much he reminds me of Jeffrey Dean Morgan facially as Negan from The Walking Dead. So I'm just looking at him on the ground going, hey, that's Negan. But he's laying there and he's almost got this look on his face like, I'm too old for this shit after the crossbody. So back in the ring, Punk hits a springboard clothesline back inside and then hits a pile driver and transitions right out of the pile driver. He transitions into the Anaconda Vice and Daniel Garcia taps out. I thought that was a damn good opener. That was a very good wrestling match to open this show. And I mentioned this on Twitter, and I'm curious if any of you picked up on this as well. Just an observation that I made. I said Garcia is impressive. Watching all the mat work, watching all the leg work on Punk here in this match, he reminded me a lot, his style reminded me a lot of Zack Sabre Jr., who has been having, he's just on a tear in the G1. I think he's lost one match so far. Sabre is having a hell of a G1 climax. But that's who he reminded me of, and I make that comparison as a compliment. He's very impressive for someone who is that young. And I can see why AEW is very high on him. And look, working with all of these big names, remember where they were attacking Sting and Darby a few weeks ago? Now he's working a match against Punk. You know, if he can continue to improve, people talk about pillars. They talk about the pillars of AEW. MJF talked about this on television a couple of weeks ago. you know, himself and people like Hangman and Jungle Boy and Darby are considered the young pillars of AEW. Daniel Garcia may yet end up becoming one of those top, you know, maybe top five young pillars of this company. He could get there. He's not there yet, but he could get there. And look, if he could have a match like this with CM Punk, here I am comparing him to Zack Sabre Jr. Imagine the kind of match he could have with Bryan Danielson. You know Danielson's in the back watching him because he's studying everybody on this roster, especially the younger guys. And you know somebody like Danielson is watching Daniel Garcia going, oh man, he's licking his chops. You know, he can't wait to get in the ring with this kid. That could be a hell of a match. Tony Schiavone was in the back with Dante Martin. Speaking of pillars of AEW, here's another potential pillar. I wonder how his brother feels. Remember they, you know, Dante Martin came into AEW as a tag team. He came in as part of a team with his brother, Top Flight, and his brother, I think, tore his ACL. That's where he's been gone for months. And in his absence, his brother has really made a name for himself and gotten over as one of the bright, you know, shining young stars in AEW. And it's a tough thing, you know, when you're in a tag team, you see that. I'm sure he's very happy for his brother. But where is that going to leave him when he's ready to come back? Is Dante Martin just going to go, you know, right back to being in a tag team? Are they going to continue to pursue him in a singles role? I think some people maybe have forgotten about, you know, the other Martin brother. I don't know how far along he is as far as a comeback date for him. We'll see what they do with Dante when his brother comes back. But Tony Schiavone was in the back with Dante Martin, who was with Leo Rush and Matt Sydal. All three of them were together there. And Sydal was not very happy with the promises that Rush has been making this week to Martin. And it was a promo package on Dynamite on Wednesday where Leo Rush was basically, you know, sort of calling him out in a way. And I thought it was leading to a match. Now, I'm sure at some point we're going to get Dante Martin against Leo Rush. Here on this show, in this segment, he was buddying up to him, almost like trying to mentor him. And Matt Sydal saw right through that and he told him, you know, you're nothing but a junk bond salesman because, you know, Leo Rush is doing this whole LBO Leo gimmick, leverage buyouts. He's, you know, he's a businessman now. All of a sudden, he's a businessman. Not a very good businessman considering how many times he's quit or retired and come back and retired. That doesn't seem like good sound business strategy to me. Hopefully, he's back for good this time because I think he could really contribute here on the AEW roster. But Sydal is not buying into any of this stuff. And Leo Rush says, look, I'll get you a match with CM Punk right here on Rampage next week. And Matt Sydal says, all right, you want to get me a match with Punk? Go right ahead. And it has been made official. It will be Matt Sydal one-on-one live in Miami next week against CM Punk. And it just feels to me almost like there's this invisible brand split for CM Punk. Punk is almost like, it feels like he's exclusive to Rampage, because outside of the match with Darby Allin at All Out, you know, he's had two TV matches now. This will be number three coming up. All of Punk's matches so far, I believe, on TV have been on Rampage. So they're trying to use Punk, I guess, to boost the show, even though the Rampage numbers continue to go down. I know, I mean, they're still good by TNT standards, but they've been going down, not up. But they're going to try again, I guess, next week because Punk's going to be against Matt Sydal. And that sounds like it could be a very good match. CM Punk and Matt Sydal are not going to have anything but at least a good match next week. So that should be fun to watch. We had the Lucha Bros against the Acclaim. Yes, Cherry Wave in the chat says it is 2010 all over again. I guess they would have been on the same roster back in 2010, right? Evan Bourne, CM Punk. I'm sure they must have wrestled, too, in WWE. I can't remember a specific match they had on TV off the top of my head. But that time period, it does kind of jive. You make a good point. Lucha Bros against the Acclaim for the AEW Tag Team Championship. Max Caster came down to the ring doing his usual rap, now that we know is pre-approved by Tony Khan. And he mentioned Ben Simmons and someone else, and then he mentioned Arn Anderson. We got an Arn Anderson name drop here about him packing heat, of course. So we had that. But the Acclaim jumped the Lucha Bros before they even got into the ring. So before the match even started, they jumped the champions. Caster sent Phoenix headfirst into the ring post. Back inside, the Lucha Bros took control after a while with super kicks and a double team splash. Anthony Bowens caught Rey Fénix with a boombox shot as he was going through a tope through the ropes. And the Acclaim worked over Penta for a little while. Eventually, Penta got the tag to Fénix. He killed Bowens with kicks. Caster ran in. He ate a hook kick. Fénix hit a stunner on Bowens for two. Caster came back with a super kick on Rey Fénix. That sent him flipping over onto his head. And at that point, it just turned into a giant super kick fest. Everybody was down. Bowens hit the Uranage on Fénix to set up the mic drop from Max Caster. But Penta pushed Caster off the top and then hit the double foot stomp. As Taz so eloquently put it here, I can't even give my own description. I have to give you the description that Taz gave on commentary. As he came off the rope and basically squashed this poor kid's nuts, Taz said, 2 feet right to the yambag region. I can't put it any better than that. 2 feet to the yambag region pretty much sums it up. And the Lucha Bros hit the double team pile driver for the win to retain their titles. I thought this was pretty good. It probably could have benefited from being a little bit longer. Honestly, it could have gone a few more minutes than it did. That's my only real complaint about this. I mean, again, the Lucha Bros, it's similar to the Young Bucks, I think. There are people who just do not like the Bucks. But there are people who do not like the Bucks' style of match because it's too frenetic. It's just boom, boom, boom. There's no time to just kind of process what you're seeing. It's just constant motion and super kicks. The Lucha Bros wrestle the same style. A lot of super kicks, a lot of constant motion, always moving around. So it's a polarizing style. You either like it or you don't. I like it. There are times where they move a little too fast where it's almost like they'll hit a big move and just immediately move on to the next one. And it's like, really? I mean, that, you know, was that necessary? Yeah. But I enjoyed this. It just could have gone a little bit longer, I thought. Speaking of matches, well, this match definitely did not go very long, nor should it have. I joked about it when it was announced on Wednesday. I had a nice laugh about it. Jade Cargill, one-on-one against Sky Blue. They talked at the beginning of this. They had a promo package interviewing a bunch of women about the big announcement from Wednesday. They announced the TBS Championship is coming. The tournament is going to be starting here and playing out over the course of these next 2 months. And then on January 5th, the very first episode of Dynamite on TBS, they are going to have the finals to crown the first ever TBS champion. It is going to be the secondary title in the women's division. It is to the women's division what the TNT title is to the men. That was the announcement they made on Wednesday. Jade Cargill would like to be the very first TBS champion. I think she's got a pretty damn good shot. You know, not knowing who's going to be in this tournament yet because it hasn't started. We haven't seen any brackets. But I think Jade Cargill's got to be one of the three top favorites to win the entire thing. I also think Serena Deeb should get a look. Because Serena Deeb is awesome. And we saw her turn heel on Hikaru Shida on Wednesday. I guess it all depends on do they want a babyface or do they want a heel to be the first ever TBS champion. Right now, they have a heel champion with Britt Baker. I could see maybe them wanting to have a babyface. You know, in that case, I wouldn't bother with Thunder Rosa because I'd rather Rosa go after Britt next year. So Ruby Soho could be, I think, a great babyface first TBS champion. But if you want to go heel, to me, I think of two names. I'm thinking of Jade Cargill might be the obvious choice, even though she might not be ready for that spot yet. We really haven't seen a lot out of her yet. But don't sleep on Serena Deeb. I think she would be a fine choice for a first TBS champion. And hopefully she'll stay healthy. I know she's had knee problems. She just came back. Hopefully the knee is okay and it won't cause her any more issues. But like I said, this wasn't much of a match. I don't think anybody in their right mind would have expected it to be. Fall away slam by Cargill. Pump kick that didn't quite get enough pump. She caught her in the groin, not so much the face, but the midsection. And she hit her glam slam finish to pretty much finish off Sky Blue. You know, remember Henny Penny, the sky is falling? Well, that's what happened here at the end of this match. She hit the glam slam, the sky fell, 1-2-3, Jade Cargill picks up the win. Thunder Rosa comes out, because after the match, Jade was continuing her assault on Sky Blue, so here comes Thunder Rosa with a chair, chasing away the heels after what Jade did to her in the triple threat match last week, beating her down with that steel chair. And that was the end of the segment. Not much of one. Just the glorified squash for Jade Cargill, keeping the issue alive between her and Thunder Rosa, building to a match between the two. Jade is number one in the women's division right now. I guess Thunder Rosa probably is number two, I'm assuming. So we're going to be getting a match between them. Not anything they've announced yet. And Bash in the chat doesn't see what the big deal is about Jade Cargill. He says Jade sucks. I don't think Jade sucks. I think Jade is still green. She's still inexperienced. Total number of matches that she's had, probably, I mean, it's probably more than five, but you probably can still have fingers left over on both hands. She hasn't had that many matches. And I think for someone in her position who is still very inexperienced, she's perfectly fine. She's acceptable. She's not great. She's got a great look. She looks like a star. She looks like $1 million. If she could put the pieces together in the ring and have longer matches, if she can be, see, the key for her, I think, is if she can go in there soon and have longer matches with people who are better than her, who can kind of lead her along. And maybe Rosa is someone like that. Serena Deeb, I would say, would be someone like that. But now that they're both heel, I don't know if they're, I can't see them working one-on-one. But if she could get in there with somebody who's better than her, who's more experienced than her, who can lead her to, let's say, a 10-minute long match, like 8 to 10 minutes, and it doesn't fall apart, and they actually have a good match, that's all she needs to do. She doesn't have to go in there and have a 20-minute classic. But you have to remember, she's still very, you know, she's very wet behind the ears. I mean, it's just going to take a while for her, I think, to get to the level where people think she can hang with the best that they have in that division. The reason I say that I think she's one of the favorites to win the TBS title is, yes, because of the way she looks like someone that you would think is a champion. She's got a great look. And if they want a heel sort of monster champion and just ripping through everybody in that division like Lesnar in WWE, I mean, she's the closest thing really in this company that they have to anyone like that. She just doesn't have the skills of a Brock Lesnar. Maybe one day she will. But I wouldn't say she sucks. I've seen people who suck. I would not say Jade Cargill sucks. And then in the main event, we had Ricky Starks, the FTW champion, defending his title against the former champion Brian Cage in a Philadelphia street fight. Starks came down to the ring. The first thing he did was he went under the ring to fish out a steel chair. And it didn't really mean much. Didn't do him any good once he got in the ring, because as soon as he got in the ring, Brian Cage started bouncing him around like a rubber ball. Brian Cage was beating the crap out of this guy. And then he threw him out of the ring, and he beat him outside the ring some more. Cage grabbed a pool cue from underneath the ring, took it inside with him. Starks went for a spear. When he hit Cage, Cage didn't even budge. It's like he ran into a wall. And Starks, Cage went for a standing suplex. Starks slipped out, grabbed the pull cue, and he jammed it. No, I'm kidding. If you wanted to end the match, that would have been one way to do it. But he hit Cage with the pull cue, then gave him a DDT as they went into the final break of the night. Come back, Starks drops a leg across Cage's face with a trash can lid underneath. He placed the trash can lid under his leg as he hit the leg drop. Cage came back, he rocked him with a thrust kick to the jaw, and he slammed the trash can over Ricky's head, and then dropped him with a flipping slam. That's what I wrote. I wrote flipping slam. I don't know if he gave that a name or not. I said that looks like a flipping slam. And he slammed Ricky Starks down stomach first onto the trash can. So Cage was setting up for the drill claw. In runs Hook. This was the big appearance of the week right here. Forget Adam Page on Wednesday. Hook in the main event here on this show. He's got the FTW belt. It is no disqualifications, although we don't see disqualifications in this company anyway. But it is a street fight, so there are no DQs. Cage, though, took out Hook. And then here comes Will Hobbs, and Cage takes him out with a kick. Ricky Starks, though, hits Cage with the FTW belt, and then he hits a spear. This time, Cage went down from the spear, but he kicked out when Ricky went for the pin. So Starks, then, I had forgotten there was a chair that was wedged in the corner. And Starks charged in, and Cage gets out of the way. And Starks goes head first into the steel chair. He took a header right into this chair. And he probably bladed after him. He came up bleeding, and the blood is just streaming down his face. But the bump, the impact into the chair looked brutal. And I just thought to myself, this is a guy who just came back recently from a broken neck. A broken neck. And he's diving headfirst into this steel chair. Ricky, 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 Ricky. What are you doing? You got to be smart. So he got busted open. Cage turned him inside out with a discus lariat. And Cage goes for the pin. Hobbs, though, slides in and breaks it up. So Hook got back inside, and he gave Cage a low blow. Now, Cage is already standing on the ropes. And Ricky grabs him on his shoulder. So again, you got to picture it. Cage is stomach first facing the ceiling. Ricky has him up. And Starks delivers his Rochambeau finish. And he drops Brian Cage and he pins him 1-2-3. Right in the middle to retain the FTW championship. I thought this was okay. I think the Punk and Garcia match that opened the show should have closed this show. I would imagine, and they do this on Rampage some weeks, that they open. They did it last week with Brian Danielson and Nick Jackson. They'll open with what the real main event is. And I think they do it because by that point, people are already getting tired. Dynamite just went off the air because usually these are taped. And so they don't want to save the Punk match for the very, very end because by then everybody might be completely burned out. That's one of the reasons why I think they do what they do. Interestingly, though, on last week's show, it was Danielson and Nick Jackson, but they did Orange Cassidy and Jack Evans in the hair match in the main event. And I was curious about the numbers to see if there was a noticeable drop-off. And there really wasn't. In fact, I think the Orange Cassidy-Jack Evans match did the highest quarter hour of the show. And that was the final segment on the show, you know, almost 11 o'clock at night. Orange Cassidy against Jack Evans did a better number than the Bryan Danielson match. Go figure. Not the first time that an Orange Cassidy segment has done really, really well. You know, we've seen him, we've seen Darby Allin do some pretty good numbers for AEW. So it's interesting to follow those patterns because that is something I never would have expected. For the show to actually spike during that segment as opposed to what they gave us at the very beginning. So we'll see what the pattern is for this week. What is the future for Brian Cage? I mean, we know that he has been frustrated because his wife told us so. And his wife didn't go out there and say that, well, you know, he should be in a better position and he's sort of just kind of drifting directionlessly if he doesn't feel the same way. And you can understand me. How could he not feel the same way? They really haven't had anything for Brian Cage to do. And whether or not you believe that Brian Cage is somebody who can be a headliner top guy in AEW, I don't see that. I just don't. Not with the talent. You know, the crop of talent they have at the top right now, I don't see there being an obvious spot for someone like Brian Cage. But I do think he is someone who could be used better. And now he's been a babyface ever since breaking away from Team Taz. You know, he might, you know, maybe going heel again on his own might not be the worst idea. You know, when his wife came out and said the things that she said and was tweeting stuff, I don't know what her goals are. I don't know what her status is. But I said, you know, Brian Cage would benefit from having a manager. He had a manager. And the worst thing I think they could have done with him is split him away from Taz. Because he's not a very strong promo. He's just not. So why not bring in Melissa Santos? He needs someone, I think, with him to cut those promos, and then he could just go out and do the work. But it might serve him better to be a heel and maybe chase after the, you know, the TNT title. He's got to work his way up to it, of course. He just lost tonight. The one good thing about that is that should be the end of this feud between Team Taz and Brian Cage. I'm kind of hoping that that puts an exclamation point on it. Ricky can move on. Question is, what does Cage do now? What does Cage move on to? And I think starting to maybe build him up for an eventual TNT title program might not be the worst idea in the world. But again, he's got to start racking up some wins on TV. So that was your Rampage show. Again, a very quick and easy watch. I agree. By the way, James in the chat says Brian Cage is a terrible face. I said, I think going back to being a heel is probably going to suit him a lot better than being a babyface. But you still need somebody with him, I think, to guide him and to do the talking for him, because he is just not a good promo. Next Friday, Rampage is going to be, I believe it's live, going to be live in Miami. We're getting Rampage before we're getting Dynamite, because Dynamite is pushed back due to sports. It is pushed back to next Saturday, October 16th, but Rampage on the 15th comes first. CM Punk one-on-one against Matt Sydal. We get The Bunny one-on-one against Ruby Soho. Inner Circle, Chris Jericho, Jake Hager, and Sammy Guevara, the TNT champion, take on the Men of the Year, Ethan Page, Scorpio Sky, and Junior Dos Santos, who I don't believe has had a single professional wrestling match in his life. So this will be very interesting to see how he does in the ring and if I have to watch him sell for Chris Jericho's punches. At least if he was going to sell for Jake Hager, I could get that. Jake Hager has fought before, not in UFC, but he's fought. But watching him sell for 50-year-old Chris Jericho was just sad last week. This week, I should say. It was just sad. So then the next night, Saturday Night Dynamite. So again, programming note, there will be no stream next Wednesday because there's no Dynamite. I will go live next Saturday. That's October 16th. Dante Martin one-on-one against Malakai Black. We have the Lucha Bros defending the AAA Tag Team titles. They will be doing so against Andrade El Idolo's mystery team. He is bringing in a mystery team to challenge Penta and Rey Fénix. The AAA Tag Team titles are going to be defended, at least this one time. But apparently the plan is for them to be defended semi-regularly on television and elsewhere here in the States. Brian Danielson one-on-one against Bobby Fish, who is officially All Elite. It was not a one-shot. Bobby Fish is in. Bobby Fish was signed weeks ago. They just didn't want it to get out because they wanted people to think that he really was somebody from the outside who they were bringing in to challenge for their title. But he was signed the whole time. And they're going to reveal the brackets for the world title eliminator with the finals taking place at Full Gear. So not the championship match, the finals will take place at Full Gear next month, which is a very important distinction to make. Because the first I heard of that, I thought to myself, like probably many of you did, that the finals were going to be taking place on TV and the title match would be at Full Gear. And I thought, well, that kind of throws a monkey wrench in my idea to have Hangman, you know, kind of cash in his world title match and challenge Kenny Omega. But it's the finals. And it's funny because the match I suggested that you do underneath Hangman and Omega at Full Gear, I said, you can do Bryan Danielson against Adam Cole. Since, he beat Nick Jackson, maybe Danielson beats Matt Jackson on TV at some point in the next few weeks, and then have him against Adam Cole at Full Gear as he tries to claw his way to a championship match. Maybe we get Danielson and Cole in the finals, but we don't have the brackets yet. So we'll have to wait until next week and find out. But those are your lineups for next week. These are your Twitter poll results at the moment for Rampage tonight. 86% thumbs up and 14% thumbs down. Ryan says, judging by his Twitter, looks like Tony Khan just finished a line of cocaine. Dude is wilding out. In what way? Is he going on a Twitter rant, or did he post a picture where his eyes are like bugging out of his head? Or I don't have Tony Khan's Twitter open right now, so you got to let me know. Is he losing his mind for some reason? Tony is going insane on Twitter. Okay, I have to check this out now. We got to get a real-time update on what's going on with Tony Khan here. Hang on a second. I got my phone right here. Let's see what's going on with Tony Khan. I'm just going to read this to you. How about we do Tony Time? We're going to do a special segment here called Tony Time. And I will just read some of these Tony Khan tweets. So about 20 minutes ago, Tony Khan tweeted, "I saw you're doing a half-hour head-to-head with us. I can't wait to finally beat your main show head-to-head. It's been a long time coming. See you next Friday for Rampage on TNT. I see you're doing a half-hour head-to-head with it." What is he talking about? A half-hour head-to-head? Well, SmackDown next Friday is on FS1 because it is game one of the ALCS. So I believe that SmackDown is still 8 to 10 p.m. unless he is... I mean, is there a different time for SmackDown next week? Because I know SmackDown is on a different channel because of the baseball game. But this sounds like he is referring to WWE. I don't know who else he would be referring to. So someone tweets back and says, "Hey, Tony, worry about your own show." And Tony Khan responds, "I already announced the Rampage card for live next Friday, and it's straight fire, Chief." What is going on here? Let's see if there's any other... I don't really see what's so controversial about this. That's all I see. So I have no idea what the big controversy. But I have no idea what he is... Oh, is SmackDown 2.5 hours next week? Why is SmackDown going 2.5 hours? You know, here's what worries me, okay? I hear this. SmackDown going 2.5 hours worries me because this could very well eventually lead to a 3-hour SmackDown. 2 hours on Fox, 1 hour on FS1. The world does not need 3 hours of SmackDown. I don't like this at all. I don't like this 2.5-hour bullshit. But, yeah, I guess going 2.5 hours could be a way to, as somebody in the chat says, stifle Rampage. You know, to me, if it's me, I put my head down and I focus on my own shit. And I don't worry about what anybody else is doing. I don't worry about whatever anybody else is saying. I just put my head down and I focus on me and my shit, and putting out the best possible product and the best possible show that I could. FS1 is a dead channel anyway. You know, SmackDown probably won't even crack a million on FS1. They'll still do better than Rampage. My prediction, they'll still do better than Rampage, you know, in the ratings. But, you know, I mean, this is all petty BS. Come on. But there you go. SmackDown, 8 to 10:30. I did watch SmackDown tonight. I will save my thoughts for the podcast on Sunday, the full recap. Tonight was not a good night if you're a fan of women's wrestling in WWE or AEW. Because those two women's matches on SmackDown were a fucking just abomination. We are officially back to the Diva stopwatch era of WWE. I'm going to have to bust out my Diva stopwatch again and start tracking the match times for the women's matches. Two King of the Ring, or I'm sorry, Queen's Crown matches tonight. And by the way, the booking fucking... horrendous. King of the Ring, Queen of the Ring, it's already fucking in the garbage. But the two women's matches, I think the longest one was 2 minutes long. The other one barely went, I think, a minute. Dynamite or Rampage tonight, the Jade Cargill match, it was a squash. So that went maybe 60 seconds, 90 seconds. If you're a fan of women's wrestling, you didn't get any tonight. You didn't get nothing between these two shows. I'll say that. But we are getting Sasha Banks against Becky Lynch on SmackDown next week, which is something to look forward to. Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch had a hell of a Hell in a Cell match a couple of years ago. Let's check out your super chats. You guys have sent in a whole bunch of them here, so let's take a look at what you are talking about as we switch over to your super chats. Drew Russell says, 2014 bad? It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. It is the diva stopwatch era. I mean, I don't see what is accomplished by sending these women out there for 90-second matches. I don't see what the point of that is. Don't fucking put them on the show, if that's the case. Don't even bother putting them on the show. Just keep them off the show. If you don't want to do women's wrestling, then don't do it. You know, at least with AEW tonight, the whole point was it was a squash for Jade Cargill. So you knew that wasn't going to go very long. But now WWE, you're doing a tournament. And then I see, you know, that I don't want to start getting into the SmackDown spoiler stuff. Because, again, the booking of that, especially the women's tournament, is just fucking ridiculous. I don't understand that at all. You know, my mistake when I put my predictions on Twitter earlier, I was trying to apply common sense to a company where common sense just simply does not apply to the vast majority of their booking. So that was my mistake. That's where I fucked up. So anyway, Naif Al-Safar, thank you for the $4.99, brother. Naif, always good to hear from you here on these streams. Food Hive, it's time to add Daniel Garcia to AEW's Four Pillars. Amen to that. The Sheriff of Patties. How well is Mark Henry being paid to say cliches and storyline points backstage? I do love these one-hour shows, though. Happy late birthday. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that. Yeah, Mark Henry, you know, these segments are... It's just funny. He stands there. He's got the big cheesy smile on his face. And it is one cliche after another, but... I have other issues with what Mark Henry has been saying this week. I didn't mind him on this show. He didn't bother me. Nick Grosso, this show needs to go live and go in a primetime spot. Well, it's not going to. This is the schedule. Sometimes it goes live, like next week, and most weeks it will not be live. Just the taping schedule they have. And it's not getting a primetime spot. Because they want to boost their numbers on Friday night, which is usually a death spot. And so they're hoping AEW can help raise those numbers. So even if the Rampage numbers are going down and they're doing 600,000, right? That's still, I'm willing to bet that that's better than whatever they were doing in that spot before. I don't have that information in front of me. I can't say that for 100% certainty, but... Clearly, TNT is very happy with the show because it was supposed to move to TBS, and now it's not. Now they're keeping it. They want Rampage on Friday nights. And so they're keeping it for themselves. Chris Quillman. Thanks so much for answering my Q&A question, but it's kind of a follow-up question. What would be your one match to show someone why you would watch New Japan? Oh my goodness, I mean, take your pick. It really depends on the kind of style that they're really, you know, interested in. Hey, Zombie MMA, all the way from Nicaragua, my number one fan from Nicaragua. Welcome. Glad to see you here on the stream. I mean, New Japan, I would love to say, oh, you know, here's an Okada match or Okada Omega, you know, one of the long matches they have. But I feel like if they're not really a fan, any kind of long match is probably going to bore them and be a turnoff. So I think of something like, you know, Moxley and Suzuki the first time they met, or Suzuki and AJ Styles, or maybe if they like comedy, something with Toriano. You know, I would just hesitate to pick any of the really great matches that I like. A lot of them are really long. I wouldn't show a super long match to someone who is a new fan or not really like a hardcore fan, but you're trying to get them interested in the product. That would be my suggestion. Don't show them a super long match. But you get one that maybe is a little bit shorter, but it's, you know, really stiff or just high impact kind of stuff. I would go for that. I think that would be a shock to the system for a lot of people. People who only know WWE. And you go watch one of those strong style New Japan matches. It's like... You know, it would probably shock them the first time that they saw it. And they might look at that and go, hey, this is real wrestling here. This looks like these two guys are really beating the crap out of each other. I like that. Not this soft stuff here from that you guys are doing in the States. I like that. That was the appeal for me when I first started getting into New Japan. It was just something different. You know, I get WWE every week and AEW has their own style, but New Japan was just something different. And that's what I liked about it. Still do. Even though it's a very cold product right now. Yeah, you know what? Oni Loco makes a very good point. You know what you should show them? Show them the last 5 minutes. Show them the last 5 minutes of any great Okada match. Show them the last, like, 3 minutes of that great Dominion match that Okada had with AJ Styles a few years ago. Show them that. Coggies, thank you for the $50 super chat. I see Coggies is, here he is, right there in the chat. He says, let's get some tunes. Okay, you want some music? We'll put some music on here. We'll put some music on, there you go. But Coggies, thank you, man. $50. Happy birthday, Solo. I am still celebrating my birthday. It's birthday week. It says, thank you for helping get me through some long shifts at work and some rough times in my life. Thanks for taking my calls and listening to me ramble. The show was amazing. I didn't get TV time. Lambert drowned out. Confirmed. Yes, that's right. Coggies, I believe, was in Philly at the show. And I had asked people to let me know because from TV... It sounded, it was hard to hear Lambert. I can imagine in the building on Wednesday, the heat that he was getting, he was probably completely drowned out by that crowd. Amiibo, what's going on? Amiibo, one of our brand new channel members. Hello to Amiibo. Michael Cuomo, yes, it is all copyright free. Otherwise, I'd be playing a lot better music than this. But unfortunately, YouTube does not allow that, so we have to work within the limits of what we can do. But Coggies, thank you, man. I'm always here for you. And I love seeing you on the streams. Cerulean Capuchin dropping a super chat. 4 a.m., been awake 22 hours. Drunk, food, AEW, and now Solo Monster. Life is good. Happy belated birthday. Been following since 2011. Here's to another 10 years. Hear, hear. Hear, hear. 2011. That was 4 years. 4 years into the podcast at that point. Frank Aquilino. Dropping $9.99. Hey, Solo Monster, this is Fists of Fire. Haven't donated in a while. Wanted to say happy birthday. I was at the Dynamite Rampage show this week. The crowd was crazy for the whole night. That Philadelphia club was hot on Wednesday. Not so much tonight, because that's the problem that you run into on a lot of these Rampage shows. By that point, the crowd is kind of tired. They probably just saw some, you know, killer main event on Dynamite. And now they're just sort of, you know, they're kind of drained. So you get a crowd that is good. But it's the same city, the same building, but they're not quite as up as they were a couple of days earlier. That's one of the biggest issues you run into with Rampage. Shy IOU, as I said earlier, dropping a $200 super chat. No message. He or she, I don't want to, I have no idea, so I don't want to say one way or the other, but... Shy is, that's amazing. No message even, just wanted to show some support for the channel and for what I do, and man, that's incredible. So thank you for that. You are the superstar of the week here on this channel. Nick Grosso, dropping $10. He's a star too. Are they setting up Jade against Baker? If so, Jade is not ready for that. Why are they doing a championship contenders tournament? Doesn't Adam Page get that shot at Full Gear? Well, a couple of things on that. As I pointed out, they're not doing the championship match at Full Gear. They're doing the finals of the tournament like they did with Omega and Hangman last year. And Omega won, and then he got his title match with Moxley on that Winter is Coming episode of Dynamite. So the finals are at Full Gear. And also, with Hangman... You know, I pitched for him a long time ago to have the title match at Full Gear. And I'm still pitching for him to get the title match at Full Gear. But it was never said going into the casino ladder match that the winner will get a championship match at Full Gear. It was the winner will get a championship match at a future date. So we don't know if Hangman is going to want his title match at Full Gear. He may decide to kind of keep it in his back pocket and save it for a rainy day. We don't know. I assume and I believe it will be at Full Gear, but they have not said that. DiLorenzo. Hey, Solomon, sir, I have a question. Out of the four horsemen and four horsewomen, who is who? For example, would Bailey be the Arn Anderson? Yeah, Bailey is the one you don't want to fuck with if you try to carjack her. She's the enforcer. So basically, who plays what role in the female horsewomen compared to the original horsemen? So who's the Ric Flair? Well, we know who the Ric Flair is, obviously. That's Charlotte. Boy, you know, I would say Sasha is probably the... I kind of look at Sasha maybe as the Arn of the group, almost like the enforcer. Heel Sasha can be vicious when she's a heel. Heel Sasha Banks can be vicious. So I kind of look at Sasha as the Arn Anderson, which is quite the visual. This is just a super chat waiting to become a reality, by the way. Putting the heads on all the old horseman bodies here. Charlotte on Rick. We get Sasha and her blue hair on Arn Anderson's body. We got Becky left and Bailey. Becky, to me, almost feels like Tully. And then Bailey, I guess, would be what? Oli? Well, I guess it depends on which version of the horseman you're talking about. Maybe Barry Windham? I could see Bailey as Barry. Who's the Paul Roma? Or the Lex Luger of the group? That I don't know. Oni Loco says that is disturbing. It is disturbing. So let's move on from this question. Off Leather Wings. Next week, I'm seeing Rampage and Dynamite floor seats. That's awesome. Have fun, my friend. Oofman Entertainment. Was I the only one hearing Excalibur calling Ray Phoenix Ray FedEx? Also, gotta get me your 14th anniversary t-shirt. And so should everyone in the chat. It's a pretty cool shirt. And they are available on Pro Wrestling Tees. But I didn't hear that. I mean, did he really call Ray Phoenix Ray FedEx? Or was he maybe making some kind of joke about, you know, Ray Phoenix flying all over the place like a FedEx delivery? Was that the analogy? I didn't hear it. So if he did it, I didn't hear it. Crash. I always thought Punk looked like Negan. Yeah, it really hit me tonight when he was laying on the floor outside after he wiped everybody out on that crossbody. I'm looking at him and stubble and everything, and I said, he looks just like Jeffrey Dean Morgan here in these later seasons of The Walking Dead. Tyrone Dunstan with the $20 super chat. I was at the show Wednesday night. And it smacked down a couple of weeks ago. AEW is so engaging, it actually kept my wife awake throughout the whole program. She normally falls asleep when we go to WWE live events. I guess that's one of the things about the AEW show moving so fast from one segment to the next, which can also be, I think, a negative. But if you're at the building live, they don't really give you a chance to fall asleep. It's just boom, 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 one right after the other. And they just try to give you a little bit of everything and squeeze a whole bunch of people on the show. So if you're there live, I just feel like there's enough there to kind of keep you up. WWE, especially those three-hour Raw shows, they can really be a slog. More than SmackDown, you know, because you have that extra hour. And with all the commercial breaks and people just sort of standing around and everything, it's a chore sometimes. But I will say, it's always more fun to go to the shows live. WWE, AEW, whatever it is, especially if you've never been before. Being there live is a different experience than watching it at home. You're generally going to have more fun being at the shows live. I'm trying to think if I've ever fallen asleep or dozed off. I have dozed off, actually, at a wrestling show. I have dozed off. I've dozed off at a couple of the WrestleManias. Like later in the night, right before the main event, and some Raws. Come to think of it, it's all WWE shows. I sometimes have dozed off. but never during the NXT takeovers. The NXT takeovers are like what you're describing with these AEW shows. When NXT TakeOver was really special, which it hasn't been because they've been stuck in that fucking building throughout the whole pandemic. Even now, still, as people have started coming out to arenas again, for whatever reason, NXT, it's like they refuse to leave the Performance Center. And now they may as well stay where they are because with the way they blew up the show, there ain't no way they're going to pack in a 10,000-seat NBA arena for an NXT TakeOver. That's just not going to happen now. I think those days are done. But those are some of the most fun shows that I was ever at. Bob the Builder, one of our channel members here, member for 3 months, Sound Off Superstar, early predictions for the Full Gear match card. I just gave you two of them earlier. Hangman Omega, and then you could do Danielson and Adam Cole maybe in the finals of the Eliminator Tournament. Those are the two, I think those are the two big ones. And I would say CM Punk. I don't know if he's done with Team Taz or not. I still would like to see CM Punk against Ricky Starks. I just think that would be a really good match. You know, right now Punk has no other obvious program, so maybe Punk and Starks. You know, obviously MJF and Darby are going to have a match. Tuxedo T Servo, thank you for the $5. Drew Russell in the chat says, Brian Cage, I could see him in NXT right now. I don't see Brian Cage in NXT, but you make a good point. You know, we talk so much about talent coming from WWE to AEW. And at some point, talent will begin to go from AEW to WWE. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. And I think Brian Cage could be potentially the first person to leave. I don't know when his contract is up. I can't imagine he's thrilled about the position he's in right now. He has spoken very highly of the environment in the locker room and just the atmosphere in the company. And he was at one point with WWE, you know, in developmental. So I don't even know if he'd want to go back. But I just see the lay of the land with the roster as it is right now. If you ask me who's that first AEW guy that's going to leave and go to WWE, Brian Cage is probably the first name I'd put at the top of that list. Turtlehead, I feel like AEW was created to get Hook over. Maybe all of these WWE guys have signed to have dream matches with Hook. What say you? I think you might be onto something there. I don't know what was going on with Hook's hair at the end of the show tonight, but I think that a lot of people would love to work with Hook. I think CM Punk would love to work with Hook. Maybe we get Punk and Hook instead of Punk and Starks. Marcus the Entertainer, AEW is mixing in a lot of potential women's feuds. Sheeta and Deeb, Jade and Rosa, Ty Conti and Anna Jay against the Bunny and Penelope Ford. The only question is who challenges Britt Baker? Yeah, the match with Thunder Rosa, I see that a revolution. So who challenges Baker in the meantime? I mean, take your pick of the baby faces that she hasn't yet wrestled. She beat Statlander, so that takes Statlander off the list. I think she wrestled Red Velvet, I believe, right? Red Velvet, she beat Ruby. I come back to Anna Jay. Even though, as you said, Anna Jay is in the middle of a feud right now. Anna Jay came back. She got a great reaction when she ran in on that one episode of Dynamite to save Ty Conti. I mean, people like Anna Jay. You know, her trying to win the championship for the Dark Order, I think that could be a storyline. I don't see her winning, though. DHV says Riho. Could do Riho. Food Hive. Proud of the strides made to the women's division. Well, that's more than I can say for the women's tag team division in WWE, which no longer exists. Rest in peace, women's tag team division. I mean, not that there was much of one to begin with, but I'm not even sure why they even have women's tag team titles anymore. Should fucking melt them down like Kama did with the Undertaker's urn and wear them around their fucking neck. That's all they're good for at this point. Layla Hirsch, there's a name that we forgot to mention. Legit Layla Hirsch. Layla Hirsch is awesome. I wouldn't mind seeing Layla Hirsch in a program against Britt Baker for the championship. But I, you know, whether it's Layla, whether it's Anna Jay, I mean, it's just sort of that stand-in to put in there until we get to Britt and Thunder Rosa. That's the match you want to build to. And then Ryan Spies, there's his super chat from earlier about the Tony Khan cocaine binge. Again, I didn't see any, besides that one tweet, I didn't really see him going crazy on Twitter, unless I'm missing something. Maybe he did the old tweet and delete. I didn't see anything else. Drew in the chat says, do I think that AEW needs a second top title? I do not. They have a top title. It's called the AEW Championship. This is not WWE. You do not need to have multiple top championships. There should be one. One top title. Then you have all the others below it. That's the way it should be. Nick Grosso, turn Brian Cage heel, put him with Dan Lambert, and make him his bodyguard. Well, Dan Lambert could certainly do the talking for him. Food Hive, Tony Khan wants the smoke. Pedro Velasquez, happy late birthday, Solomonster. I have been busy with college and work, but I still want to support as much as I can. Take care, bro. Well, you didn't have to do that, but thank you, Pedro. It's very nice of you to say that. And thank you for the birthday wishes. Baba Booey joining us tonight. Look at this, Baba Booey. 3 hour SmackDowns, no thanks. I'm good, my dude. Yeah, you and me both. We don't need 3 hours. We don't need 3 hour Raws, let alone 3 hour SmackDowns. Epsilon Sama, 2.5 hour Rampage to show Vince McMahon. Hashtag cocaine Tony, hashtag book it. So they're just going to constantly try to one-up each other by adding half an hour to each show until they're 5 hours, 6 hours. Is that what we're going to do here? That's the point in which I tap out. No mas. No mas. For the Solo Monster, if it ever gets to that point. Devin the Doppler, I was kind of looking forward to Starks against Punk. Do you think they avoided doing it right now because Starks would have to take the loss? Maybe, but I think they might get to it at Full Gear. There's still time. They could build to it at Full Gear. It doesn't have to be a title match. I don't think the FTW title has to have anything to do with it. I mean, Punk does not need that title. I'm hoping we still get it, though. Joshua Carlos, who beats Punk down the road, MJF or Malakai Black? Depending on when they do the match, you know, it could be Omega. You know, it could be Kenny Omega when they eventually wrestle. Maybe they trade wins back and forth. Of the two that you mentioned there, I like the idea of MJF getting the win. You know, Jericho ended up beating him at the end of their feud. I would like to see MJF maybe be the one to get a win over CM Punk. Or the first win. KD with the $5. I'm sure you tortured your brother as a teen putting on wrestling holds as I did. I did a backbreaker. Did you use a sharpshooter or a leg lock? Oh, I used the sharpshooter. I just talked about this, I think, on the members only Q&A. I used the sharpshooter. And my other favorite was Bob Backlund's crossface chicken wing. That might actually be my favorite. Very painful move. Very painful submission. And I've had it applied to me as well. A friend of mine once locked that hold on. And it is a very effective hold, I will say. Not exactly the easiest move to apply if you're, let's say, in a bar fight all of a sudden. I would imagine it would be tough to lock on the chicken wing without some cooperation. Not as good as just breaking, let's say, a broken beer bottle over someone's head. But those are my two go-tos right there. The sharpshooter and the chicken wing. CW21, hey Solomon, sir, I suffered a concussion a few weeks ago. Your content is some of the only things I've been able to listen to. Thank you for helping me get through this difficult time. You are the man. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. My first question would be, what happened? Concussions are no fun. You know, some people get a concussion. If it's mild, you know, they may be fine. Other people get one concussion and it completely messes them up for months. Years. Hopefully that's not, you know, what's happening to you. But every situation is different. It's very scary, you know, because you're rattling your brain. It's trauma to your brain. So hopefully in your case, it's just mild and it's not too serious and everything is okay. But, you know, I've had friends who aren't even wrestlers, but I have friends who actually do wrestle independently. And, you know, they've gotten concussions and you get the headaches and they get blurred vision. It's tough, right? Because everybody, it affects everybody differently. But I'm sorry you're going through that. I'll try to talk very low so I don't talk too loud. Because sometimes that could hurt the ears too. Dr. NXT Scorpio, this might sound silly, but would WWE be that petty and have Natalya win the Queen of the Ring and start calling herself the Queen of Hearts? Would they be that petty? Yes. Will they be doing that? No. DiLorenzo, I'd show Ishii against Shibata at the G1 to a new fan. That 11-minute match was great. Well, that's why I suggested Styles and Suzuki, because that was from the G1. I think it might have been a Corican Hall, and I don't remember that being an overly long match. It was a pretty, I don't want to say short, but, you know, kind of a normal length match. But I just remember thinking, man, these two guys are just killing each. They're just killing it. I would definitely show that match to somebody. Boots! I was wondering where This Isn't Ballet came from and if ballet instructors tell their students this isn't pro wrestling. That is a great question. You know, as far as the philosophical questions go, that's actually a great question. Because I don't know where it started. It started years ago, you know, this ain't ballet. Meanwhile, not for nothing, from what I know of ballet, not that I ever joined the ballet team or anything, but... You know, ballet ain't ballet. Ballet's not easy either. I saw Black Swan, all right? Ballet is no joke. That's just as cutthroat as pro wrestling can be. Takes a lot of discipline, too. That would be funny, though, if the ballet instructor said, this ain't that fake, phony pro wrestling shit. They'd have every right to, because all these pro wrestling people have been bashing ballet for all these years. I don't blame them. Wrestling Reads in the chat says, you're not a real savage until you've curb-stomped your brother off the edge of a couch. That would be pretty brutal. I thought for a second there, I thought that said your mother. I go, that would be just straight fucking evil. I mean, that's just something I can't endorse that. Daniel Travis, thank you for the $5. Happy birthday, Solomonster. YouTube copyright sucks. If you ever need copyright-free music, whatever, I would donate my stuff to help out. Well, that's very nice. I'm always listening for new stuff. There's a lot of great copyright-free music out there. You just got to know where to look. And then you got to be careful, because some of it that says copyright free isn't really copyright free. So if you stick to the YouTube audio library, which is very, I mean, I've picked it dry by now, but I try to change it up as much as I can. But you just you can't take any chances. It's no fun. You can't take any chances with this stuff anymore. Everything is so strict. Nir Rof, happy birthday, Solo Brother. Much love from Israel. Nir, shout out to Nir. Good to hear from you, brother. Beowulf hit a Steiner screwdriver on one of his friend's brothers, and I thought I killed him for a second. I thought Scott Steiner killed someone every time he hit the move. I mean, it's such a ridiculously dangerous-looking move. Yeah, but Scott Steiner was a pro. I mean, I'm sure he... Well, I shouldn't say that. The way the Steiners used to beat up on job guys back in the day. I shouldn't sit here and assume that nobody ever got hurt from that move. Hulkling 93. Mark Henry's comments on today's wrestlers. soft-ass people, he said, and that when actual wrestlers return, that's when wrestling will be back, because people will see the strength in them. You know, Mark Henry is one of the strongest, or at one time was, the strongest man in the world. Mark Henry was, and still is to this day, a very big, strong individual. His perspective, I think, on those things is going to be very different, because he's looking at it as someone who was very powerful and got over based on his strength. Not everybody can get over based on their strength. There are a lot of smaller guys in wrestling now, more so than there were when he first broke in the 90s. And they didn't get over on strength. They got over on athleticism. They got over because they can fly all over the place, or whatever it is that they got over with. It's not all about the body. It's not all about the muscles. It's not all about, you know, can you gorilla press someone? I think there's definitely room for that in wrestling. I don't think that we should have an entire roster full of people who look like Mark Henry or who look like Lex Luger or anyone like that, because that would be fucking boring. And frankly, a lot of those big muscled up guys over the years, and I'm not saying this, you know, about Mark, but a lot of those guys also were maybe a little too big and couldn't really work a very exciting match. The best matches some of those guys ever had were with the smaller people who can actually fly around and move around, like a Bret Hart, like a Shawn Michaels, who could bump all over the place for them. That's why there's a lot of Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels fans out there. There's more people who look like them than people who look like Mark Henry. Mark Henry, he's like an attraction, right? Hall of Pain, Mark Henry, who was going around killing everybody and throwing people around, was awesome. And I'm glad he got that run before, you know, his run came to an end in WWE. And he was the World Heavyweight Champion. I never thought it would happen for him. He was so injury prone. I never thought he would get the shot. And then he had this career resurgence there for a few months. But not everybody looks the way Mark Henry does. And so I think he's looking at things, when I hear a comment like that, you know, he's looking at things a certain way. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's right or wrong. That's his perspective on things as somebody who, you know, went through it and came through the wrestling business and got over as the world's strongest man. Well, not everybody can, you know, bend frying pans and pull tractor trailers like Mark Henry was doing on SmackDown there for a while. Jamin John, is The Rock really, or I guess he means, does The Rock really have any heat with Shawn Michaels? During 2008's Hall of Fame, Rock said that he wanted to wrestle Shawn Michaels ever since he was 14 years old, when Shawn came to wrestle for his grandmother. To my knowledge, Rock did not want to work with Shawn Michaels when he was in WWE, because going back to those days where his grandmother promoted wrestling, I think in Hawaii, the Rockers came in, Shawn Michaels came in. He was said to be, you know, I guess disrespectful. I don't know if that was a pattern of behavior or a one-time thing, but a young Rock never forgot that. He was always a Bret Hart guy. Bret kind of took Rock under his wing when he came in 96 and 97. But if they wanted to do the match, they had the chance. They could have done the match, and they never did. And so that's always been my understanding of it, is that there was still some ill feelings there on Rock's part, and frankly also on Shawn Michaels' part. There are plenty of stories about him and Triple H playing politics behind the scenes and being jealous of Rock, because Rock got pushed very quickly when he came in. I could absolutely believe that Shawn Michaels and Triple H would look at The Rock in 98 and 99 and feel threatened and be jealous and want to protect their spot and do things maybe to stifle his push. Or as Triple H in 98 was beginning to ascend, Shawn Michaels would look at that and go, okay, Hunter should be the guy, not Rock. I would imagine they weren't too thrilled when Rock was you know, made the world champion at the end of 98. Triple H still hadn't even been the world champion once. He had been around longer than Rock has. You mean to tell me there was no professional jealousy there? Stories about WrestleMania 15 where they were trying to get Rock booted from the main event. Oh, it should be Austin and Mankind. It should be Austin and Mick Foley. Trying to play fucking games behind the scenes. I can understand why Rock wouldn't want to do business with Shawn Michaels. Now he speaks well of him, and maybe in his later years he would love to wrestle Shawn Michaels, but by then it was too late. Rock was already off in Hollywood, Shawn retired, and they missed the boat. Rock and Shawn Michaels is one of those dream matches we just never got. You know, I think of dream matches I would have loved to have seen. Bret Hart against Kurt Angle is very high up on my list. Rock and Shawn Michaels would be on that list as well. That could have been a WrestleMania match right there, and unfortunately we never got it. It's too bad. Marcus the Entertainer. Tony Khan did a tribute to the original ECW after the show with Taz, Chris Jericho, Jerry Lynn, and Dean Malenko. Dean was emotional. I saw Blue Meanie, I think, was there too, because he put pictures up on Twitter of him making his entrance. I said, don't tell me that AEW signed the Blue fucking Meanie. I mean, this signing binge is out of control. But I think it had to do with that. I think Blue Meanie was there as well. Christian with the $4.99. Hell in a Cell will finally be the Blood Feud finale match that it was meant to be. Good night of wrestling. Keep it up. Yeah, Shawn Michaels. Oh, not Shawn Michaels. Seth Rollins. Who just reminded me of Shawn Michaels. Seth Rollins in a Hell in a Cell match in October. Coming up against Edge. Hopefully that'll go better than his last Hell in a Cell match in October. Yeah, you know, Edge and Rollins having a Hell in a Cell match, I assume at Crown Jewel, sounds good to me. I think that's going to be a great match. Their first two matches were great. I think the third one will be great too. If only there wasn't a pay-per-view earlier this year called Hell in a Cell. It wouldn't feel so weird to be having a Hell in a Cell match when we actually need to see one to really blow off this grudge match feud between these two men. Why do we have a pay-per-view called Hell in a Cell? Why do we even have a pay-per-view anymore called Hell in a Cell? There's no point to it. Get rid of it. This is when you bring out Hell in a Cell, when the situation calls for it. Not because of what month is on the calendar. That's just goofy. And Jamin John, why Candice Michelle is not as well regarded as Lita and Trish Stratus, even her Vince's Devil's teammate, Tori. Well, this is all over the place. This is a very poorly worded super chat. I'm trying to make the most of it here. Jamin, you're killing me here. Either that or you need a new keyboard. Well, Candice Michelle wasn't as good as Trish Stratus was. Candice Michelle improved. I will give her credit. She was not very good when she started. She didn't know what she was doing. She trained. She improved. By the end there, she got good. But she was no Trish Stratus. So I don't see how you can even make that comparison. I just think it's silly to even try to make that comparison. They're not on the same level. Rob in the chat, Trax just, he had enough. He decided to step away and go on vacation and never came back. So that's what happened then. I haven't spoken to him in many years. I hope he's doing well, wherever he may be. A lot of people got exposure to to my show and other shows because of him. He's a good guy. But yeah, he's been out of the wrestling loop for a while now. I don't know where he is. So I think I'm all caught up now on your messages. Thank you for all the great questions and all the super chat love tonight that I was not expecting. I do appreciate that very much. You guys hanging out with me here on a Friday night, early Saturday morning now. Let's go back to the Twitter poll real quick. Take a look at where we're at. 85% thumbs up, 14% thumbs down. At Solomonster. Go follow me on there. At Solomonster is the place to go. Yeah, we have a lot of people actually in the chat who discovered the podcast many years ago on TV Tracks. Again, it was great exposure for the show and served its purpose for a long time. And now we have our own home here on YouTube. Marcus the Entertainer, buy or sell Gail Kim or Lita? Boy, you know, that's a pretty open-ended buy or sell there. Buy or sell on what? On wrestling ability in ring matches? Gail Kim or Lita? Me personally, I probably would go with Gail Kim as far as a wrestler goes, but you're going to have a lot of people who buy on Lita because Lita was a bigger star. Yeah. But they're both very good. Gail Kim, though, the matches that she had with Kong and TNA and some of the other matches while she was there, Taryn Terrell, I mean, those are some really good matches. That really helped put the Impact Women's Division on the map back then. And it was after the Impact, really TNA, well before WWE, was taking its women's division seriously. And I think eventually led to WWE waking up. It was a combination, I think, of what Impact was doing and then AJ Lee making the comments that she made publicly that really lit a fire under WWE's ass and got them to start taking the women's division seriously. And now it feels like they're regressing with the lengths of some of these matches on TV. They're actually sliding backwards. Kiara Santiago. There you see the shocked Mr. Regal super chat. Who do you think will be the first TBS champion? Serena Deeb or Jade Cargill would be my early guess. All depends on whether they want a heel or a babyface to be the first champion, but I think you can't go wrong with either of them. Serena would be the better choice because you're going to get better matches with Serena. So if match quality is important to them and they're really serious about pushing Serena now with this fresh heel turn, Serena Deeb would be my pick. She'd be my choice as the first TBS champion. Yeah, Gail Kim deserved way more than what she got in WWE. She is a legend. She never seemed to get a fair shake for whatever reason. It just felt like she never had the allies, I guess, that she needed to get over in WWE. Because if you don't have certain people on your side, you're screwed. And I know she won the women's title in her very first match. She lost it not long after that. But after that, she never really had a shot. She never really did anything of note in WWE. It had nothing to do with her lacking any talent, so I have no idea, you know. I to this day, don't quite understand why she never was really given that opportunity. You know, she was talented, she's, you know, easy on the eyes, which was obviously, you know, it's very important to them. It's a visual product, right, on television, so she looks great, she's great in the ring. I don't understand it. And I don't blame her for going back either. She went back a second time, and after that, she had enough. She says, no more WWE for me. Tuxedo says, oh, she has opinions on why she was held down in WWE. Oh, I'll bet. I've heard some of those. I know she definitely has her own thoughts on why things didn't work out, but what the real answer is, I mean, who knows? She wasn't blonde. Yeah, Wrestling Reads, you might be onto something there. She wasn't blonde. Her boobs weren't big enough for WWE, I guess. They weren't choking her, so therefore she wasn't going to get the push that she deserved. Unbelievable. But credit to TNA. They did a hell of a lot more with her than WWE ever did. Bruce Pritchard said Vince McMahon didn't like Asian women. Well, that's what I mean. All it takes is one person. If that's true, if the person is the boss and he doesn't like something about you, if Vince McMahon looks at you and says, I don't like this person, you're fucked. That's it. Your career is done. How sad is that? All right, be the booker. I know you're waiting. You're waiting on this. Be the booker. That sound you just heard is hopefully one that we will not have to play again here at the end of this segment. That's our anthem for Be the Booker, because the last few weeks I've made some very awful choices here. So let us hope that we do not hear that buzzer again as I'm going to attempt to book the main event of WrestleMania. Let's see what we come up with here tonight. First choice here is the reigning WWE champion, Big E. All right. Getting started on the right foot here. Picking the WWE champion. Who will Big E be stepping into the ring with here? His opponent will be Enzo Amore. Big E in the WrestleMania main event against Enzo Amore. That's a fail. Not doing any better here on these matches. We should be compiling, by the way, a list of all these horrible matches that I have booked here in this segment. I am sure that we could put all of these together. It would probably look like the worst wrestling card. It might top Heroes of Wrestling as the worst card ever put together. I haven't been keeping track. I need somebody else to go back and track all of this. But anyway, Big E against Enzo Amore is definitely not a WrestleMania main event, I think it's fair to say. How you doing? Not too good. Not too good, Enzo. I'm not doing too good at all. I'd be better off booking myself in these matches. Nero wants to know, how am I celebrating my birthday? I'm celebrating it with all of you. Right? I mean, isn't that what I'm doing here? We're hanging out here on YouTube on a Friday night. Kiara says, the way I physically cringed when Enzo came up. Good Lord. All right, so anyway, here's the schedule with all of the shows being moved around and everything. First of all, episode 725 of the podcast is coming up on Sunday. I have not watched Dark Side of the Ring yet on Johnny K9. I'm going to watch that tomorrow. And my review will come up on that in the next few days, so watch for that. There will be no live streams until next Friday. So the next time I'm live with all of you will be next Friday, October 15th. That will be the Miami episode of Rampage. Apparently there is a 2.5 hour SmackDown that night, but we'll probably just keep it to Rampage. And then live again the very next night. So back-to-back nights, next Friday and Saturday. I don't know what time Dynamite is airing next Saturday. I'm assuming it's 8 o'clock. So if that's the case, then 10 p.m. Eastern next Saturday will be the Dynamite review. And then right into the podcast, I guess, the next morning. So that's going to be 3 straight days next week. This is good, though. I get a little bit of a break now from all the live streams for a week. It's good. It's good. I've been burning myself out here with everything. I have to catch up on other stuff, too. So that'll be good to get all caught up on that. And then the new Halloween movie is coming out next weekend as well. I probably will watch it that Sunday night. I was going to watch it on Saturday, figuring I'm streaming on Friday, and then I realized, fuck, there's a Dynamite on Saturday. So probably won't be watching that until next Sunday. And I'll probably do a review, you know, like I did for the Sopranos movie. And like I'll be doing on the podcast Sunday for the Undertaker New Day Netflix movie, which I did watch. I'll have some quick thoughts on that on Sunday. So that'll be episode 724. One last reminder here, if you missed it at the beginning of the stream, not just for the t-shirts, they are on Pro Wrestling Tees, but part two of the members only Q&A for all of our channel members. That's all tiers, whether it's the superstar or the legend tier. 50 additional minutes in addition to the 34 or so that I did in part one. So you're getting almost 90 minutes of Q&A. It is now up. Part two went up earlier today on the channel, answering your questions. So if you're looking for a way to kill some time, uh-oh, look who it is. Armed Anderson is back. He's popping up on all my streams now. Look at that. Pointing that gun right at me here. Easy there. Easy. Arn is so angry. He's got that scowl on his face. It's gotten into him. Marcus the Entertainer just dropped $2, though. Fantasy booking, Freddy versus Jason. Well, luckily for you, there's a movie called Freddy vs. Jason. You don't need me to fantasy book that. It's already been fantasy booked for you. If I booked it, the answer is Jason. I'm not going to go against my namesake. Jason would go over. I've never been a big Freddy fan. Freddy can go, you know, finger himself or fuck himself. I don't give a shit. I'm a Jason guy. The arsonist, Armed Anderson. Yes, he was literally playing with fire on Dynamite this week for some inexplicable reason. The arsonist, Armed Anderson. I like that. Would I ever do a review on the Sopranos seasons? Probably not. Going back to review a show now that's 20-some-odd years old? Probably not. But if you've never watched it, here's my review. Go watch it. It's a great show. Great show. All right, guys, I'm all tapped out. I'm going to head out. Have yourselves a fantastic rest of your night. Have a fantastic weekend. And do keep it locked in here and tune in to 7:25 on Sunday. We'll get that podcast up for you as we do each and every single week. And then remember, live again next Friday, not Wednesday. And we'll get to do this all over again at that point. So take care, guys, and I'll see you on Sunday for 7:25. Take care.